Hello, it's me, Alan O'Donoghue. I do a podcast each week, which you're listening to now, episode number, 273 or something like that. So I'm a teacher at a high school in Preston, Our Lady's Catholic High School. And I think I started teaching computing, 2010, 11. And I've made loads of mistakes and I go around and now I'm trying to help other teachers not to make the same mistakes. And I bump into all kind of interesting people on my travels. I've just bumped into somebody who's a bit interesting. But before I tell you who this person is, I'm going to see if you can guess. So the first thing I'm going to do is this person is sat in front of me now. And on the table in front of me, I can see a loaf of bread, a jar of jam. And of course, it's raspberry jam because no other jam would do. And some butter and a knife. So I'm going to ask this person to make a sandwich for me. So I say, pick up two slices of bread.
Pick up two slices of bread. Cannot compute. You haven't told me which hand to pick up two slices of bread with.
Oh, my goodness. Right. Put your left hand in the air.
Left hand in the air.
Okay, so you may have guessed now who it is. So it's Phil Bagg. Tell us a little bit about who you are.
Hi, Alan. Really nice to see you again. Yeah, I'm a teacher at 5 schools in Hampshire, and I'm also travelling around and doing some courses and helping teachers across the country to come to terms with the new computing curriculum, and thoroughly enjoying it as well.
So every time I think of you, Phil, I always imagine you in a helicopter, because I've always seen you kind of, here's these 5 schools in Hampshire and you're flying around all the time. Yeah. So to meet you up in Manchester is not a surprise to me, because you just made your helicopter go a little bit further this time.
It does feel a little bit like that, although I do really appreciate the opportunities to work in 5 schools, because it's really great to try things out with lots of different children and work with some great different staff as well. So yeah, it's been good.
And it also means you get to model iteration quite a lot as well.
Yes, yes.
You know, keep repeating the same thing to achieve a desired outcome.
Yeah, and it's quite interesting. You know, one of the things I do is I produce a lot of planning, but it really helps when you've taught something 3 or 4 times to sort of iron out all the worst bits and make all the mistakes. So, you know, often sets of planning that I've got on my website might have gone through 3 or 4, 5 iterations, you know, before sort of coming up with a decent quality that's worth sharing.
And one of the things I would really encourage people to share things, because from my own perspective, I know that I've shared like the Python materials I've shared are online. It's not just the fact that you think, oh, loads of people have downloaded this, but actually people have written back to me saying, oh, I've just tweaked this a little bit.
Yeah.
I found that link doesn't work anymore, so I've had another one in. And it's one of those great things about being part of the open source community that people then take it, own it.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things I found is that also I found lots of really great collaborators who are willing to work with you because you share things out there. I mean, I've got a fantastic friend at Southampton University's professor of computing science. You know, he's been brilliant at helping me understand some of the sort of finer points of things. And I think part of the reason people are more willing to sort of collaborate is because they know we're putting stuff out there and, you know, we're doing things for the greater good, really. So I think that's been a really exciting, you know, a thing to be part of. I had a lovely email from a gentleman in Valencia today, actually, or was it yesterday, just saying thank you for the material. So, you know, and I had a lovely video sent to me last week of a lady in Holland actually doing the jam sandwich in Dutch. So it's those little things which you just think, oh, that's fantastic. You're helping out there.
Why do you think that jam sandwich thing has become such a hit, or, you know?
Do you know, I don't know, and sometimes I think it's the bane of my life, really. Yeah. But no, I think it's mainly because it's this idea of unplugged computing. It's the idea of sort of taking something away from programming, and I think, although I personally prefer teaching the programming, I think, you know, I never have a child wander across a playground going, oh, Mr. Bagg, I've written a wonderful algorithm last night. But I do have children come and say, oh, I've written something in Scratch, or I've written something in Touch Develop, or I've, you know, I've done some Python programming, you know. So personally, but I think when you're a little nervous about the new curriculum, the jam sandwich is something that every teacher can jump into with very little sort of training or understanding and get something out of, you know.
One of the things where it's really been a hit with me is I find it a really useful tool to get across this concept that humans are great at ambiguity.
Yes.
You know, just get that thing over there and just put it there. Oh, yeah, I know exactly what you mean. Yeah. What time is it? Well, it,
is it 10, 11, around that?
Yeah.
Whereas with the jam sandwich, because you then sort of personify the rabbit, the robot.
and the rabbit.
So because you're acting as the robot, you're then doing something that's very unhuman, which makes it so laughable because it's like spread the jam on the bread. So you pick up the jar of jam and then try No, that's not what I meant. Yeah, but that's what you said.
Yeah.
You have to do things very, very literally.
And actually, it's been really difficult to train myself to do that. I look back at the original video, which is still on YouTube, and actually, I'm even more pedantic these days for what I do because I've actually trained myself out of, and I follow very closely exactly what the children tell me to do. So, you know, if a child says, put your hand into the bread, I will actually physically push my hand right through five or six slices and pull it out with all the slices attached. But it's taken me quite a while to sort of model that that pedanticness, which I'm trying not to do in any other area of my life, Alan. I want to tell you that now.
I think that's maybe the problem with me. I actually find that quite easy to do that. But the other thing is, just if people are looking at that video or they've not seen it before and they're planning on using it, a couple of things I'd say that go along with that is never show that video to the class you're going to do it with because it just takes all the fun away. It's like telling people what's going to happen at the end of it, you know, who gets murdered and who does it. Yeah. And then the other thing I'd say about it is you don't actually have to have a jar of jam.
No.
We turned up, Vicky and myself, we were running a code club at St. Anthony's, one of our partner primary schools. And Vicky was planning to use Scratch, the online version on these little netbooks. And there was some issue. So while they were sat down trying to sort that out, I just sat down and said to these year five children, who can tie it? Oh, we can all do it. Okay, well, I'll take my tie off. Mm. And it was like they said, bend down. So I bend down. I fell over. No, not that too much. You know, pick up the tie. And I did, you know. So you can actually do it with anything, which is
fantastic. Well, I mean, the original idea came from Dan Gardner in he's a Key Stage 3 master teacher. And he was making T-Bot. And I thought, well, I loved T-Bot, but I just couldn't see that washing with Key Stage 2 and hot tea. But, you know, so it's a really good idea. And I think it's the type of thing almost everybody needs to see once to realise this idea of precise instructions.
Now, one of the things I noticed today and other times, you've used raspberry jam.
To be honest, I had no choice about what jam was actually bought in today. So, I mean, you got whatever jam came.
Okay, with it.
In fact, I went to a course on last week, and the only thing I could find was honey. So it wasn't jam at all. You know?
No, that's just not good enough.
Yeah.
So did those people ask for a refund? Yeah. After,
no, they all like the course.
So I was actually planning to use raspberry jam as a nice segue into saying, have you ever been to a raspberry jam event?
I always use raspberry jam because it really fits well with, maker community.
But that aside, have you ever been to a raspberry jam event?
Do you know, it's funny, I haven't. And it's slightly, I feel a bit bad about it. Not in a bad way, but actually I'd really like to. I mean, I actually do have some Raspberry Pis. And in fact, I'm working with a school next year. And we've been looking at how we can get that into year six and, work some Python with it and also do some Scratch. I've got a little, I built a little module for my own son. And what we did is we set up a Raspberry Pi camera and linked it up with a distance sensor. So every time he goes in and uses the PlayStation, it takes a photo of him and sends it down onto my, and then I shout up and tell him, now, okay, that's a silly idea, but actually, we're thinking of doing some work around that.
That is one of the nice things about the experimental things on the Raspberry Pi, that you can say, do you know what we've built on our Raspberry Pi? We've built something that when you throw it out of the window, it takes photos. Why?
I don't know why, but it's fun.
That's right. Sometimes there isn't, all you can say is, just because we can.
Yeah.
Yeah, but won't you break it? Well, but it might cost us £20 to buy another one.
I'm really interested because I think there's often an issue with primary around the setup of something like that and the issue. So I'm interested. I've been working with a few guys who are putting some Scratch GPIOs out there as well.
Is that Simon Walters?
He's doing some fantastic jobs. So I'm going to nick some of his ideas and see if we can work something together. But I'm quite interested to see if we can get some decent guides out there so that other primary schools can have a little go at the top end. And sure. I think it probably is more Key Stage 3 generally.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, there'll be a few schools who like to push things and that's cool.
But I have, at some of the jams I've been to, I've met these amazing 5 and 6 year olds.
Oh, wow.
Who are able to tell me no end of stuff about Minecraft and this, that, and the, because they're obviously getting a lot of support and encouragement at their home.
Mm.
I've also met some teachers who're saying, I teach year 5 or year 4. Apparently, we're supposed to be teaching text-based programming.
Yeah.
Do you feel that's true, that there is a requirement for text-based programming?
No, not at all. And in fact, I mean, in the early days, I tried some text-based programming, really, before the national curriculum came out, because I just wanted to see what's doable.
Mm-hmm.
And I found that, actually, in year 6, it is doable to do a bit of text-based programming. The problem is not so much whether the children can do it. It's more about the teacher level of competence and understanding themselves. And because the debugging is more complex, you as a teacher have to get your head around and have done some stuff before you teach it. So I think it's doable in year 6, but my general feeling is that on the whole, I've just done a course today and I push Scratch a lot more because I think actually that's a much more doable thing for a general class teacher to work their way through and do something like that all the way through Stage 2.
Somebody asked me the same question because some of the courses I've had primary colleagues on and somebody said, could you do Python with a year 5 class? So I actually turned the question back and says, can you touch the tip of your nose with your tongue? And they said, I don't know, I've never tried. I said, would you want to be able to do it? They said, well, no. Well, I said, well, you probably can teach Python, but why would you want to when there's so many other fantastic, more age appropriate?
I think that's probably the big issue. It's interesting, when I did the Python stuff, I mean, I found for the debugging side, there was probably some real benefits, probably better benefits even than debugging Scratch. But I found for the conceptual understanding side, I felt actually we pushed on and did a higher level of understanding of things in Scratch than we did really in Python. Because I felt we almost took a step back and did slightly simpler because the GUI is a lot harder to work with and all of those things. And I think, I will do some Python next year with one of the schools I'm working with because they really are.
They want to push it.
And actually, their children's literacy level and maths level is quite high. So I think it's a good thing to go with. But actually, the vast majority of schools, I'll probably push Scratch more because I see myself getting better thinking skills out of it and the children being able to do a wider range of projects and more independent projects. I mean, I've got one child in one of my schools who's gone and done loads of Python on his own and touch develop and all sorts of things. And he's working at a really high level. But he's probably more of the exception on his own.
Yeah.
Whereas I find I get lots of children working on projects with the Scratch side on their own.
And then the other thing is when we're saying you can teach Python, you really want to teach things that have got firm footings or firm foundations.
Yeah.
And while something is capable or possible, that's not necessarily always a reason for doing something.
No, definitely.
Can you tightrope along the edge of a building? Well, yes, I can, but I'm not really sure there's that much value in it.
It's annoying for me because I actually really enjoy teaching it.
Yes.
But I actually think the children get more out of other programming languages at this age. So I've backed off it a little bit and written a lot more.
But I would also say this flip side argument is also true, which is some teachers have said to me, I heard that somebody was teaching Scratch to a GCSE class. What, you know, the very idea of it. I said, well, I teach Scratch.
Yeah, of course.
But what's the value in it? Because sometimes we need these lessons where we can have nice fluffy kittens because some of the things we do are actually really tough and really challenging. Yeah. And there's just a certain day where you think, my head is hurting.
Let's
try and build a game within Scratch. Let's try. Yeah. Oh, yeah, actually, yeah.
But it's been really interesting working with Southampton Uni as well. Actually, they would use bits of Scratch even at undergraduate level, just for little intros and just for little ways of looking at something. One of the things I do with all of my children, when they get to almost the last lesson in year 6, is I go in and I open up the 2D Minecraft version in Scratch.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's code that is meters long in reality. And I just say, look, you haven't really, pardon the pun, you haven't scratched the surface with this. You've done a little bit, you've done an intro. If I was talking to teachers, I'd talk about, you know, somebody quoted, it takes 10,000 hours to become a
That's
good
right.
programmer.
Yeah, yeah.
So we're not, you know, we're only just sort of scratching the surface, forgive the horrible scratch pun there. And I think it's, so I've had teachers say to me, oh, you know, my kids are finished with Scratch by year six. Oh, that's rubbish. You know, you probably haven't investigated loops within loops
that's
within
right.
loops.
And children have said the same thing to me when they've come to us in year seven. Oh, we're doing Scratch. We've already done this.
Yeah, that's not.
And then the other.
It's an ICT mentality.
Yeah, that's
it's,
right.
I've done PowerPoint, which you probably have.
Yeah.
And or I've done, but actually this is an open-ended programming language. You can create almost anything.
Yeah.
You know, okay, it's a little limited with functions and that side of things, although Scratch 2's got some aspects of that. But
like, it's almost like the same. What about London? Oh, I've been to London. Went to Euston Station.
Yeah.
Didn't really like
There's
it that
There's only
much.
Another 8 million people out there I haven't visited and talked to and so many thousands of buildings and all the rest of it. Yeah, no, I totally think that as well.
So there is so much more scope and potential that's not been fully realised within that.
I think we're at this early stage where and people often sort of jump into programming and actually primary teachers have been absolutely fantastic at jumping on and trying stuff. And one of the things that I love the most of a day like I've been doing today when I've been doing Scratch program in the afternoon has been people come and say, oh, I'm not scared of this anymore.
and that
just makes me feel fantastic.
Yes.
You know, if you're not scared of it, you'll go back and you'll have a go and you'll roll it out bit by bit to your staff and that's cool.
I think I have found a couple of times, because I've been doing quite a lot of training myself at the moment, which is unfortunate. Sometimes teachers coming on these courses with unrealistic expectations. There's a lot of high stakes because they think this is the only one day in a year that they're entitled on the CPD. They've had to travel 3 or 4 hours on a train to get here, and they're expecting at the end of the day they're going to go away
and
as
program.
A master in Python.
And actually, it takes you years.
Yeah.
I mean, the thing I've probably realised more than anything is the more you do, the more you realise you don't know.
That's right.
You know. And actually, I have a real respect now for sort of, you know, higher levels of programming. And also, what I love about this is just my own development. You know, I now look at bits of technology and think, oh, I wonder how that works. I wonder how we're operating that lift and that intercom system or the thing on the train which tells you when you get to places. It's that sort of opening up of all bits of technology and you think, oh, I probably do have a bit more understanding of that now, you know, or I could think of ways I could do it, you know. And I hope for my children, the kids I teach, that they will have that same sort of exploratory interest in what's around them, you know.
And then the other thing that goes with this as well, these, I think, unrealistic expectations where people are saying, give me a worksheet or something. Because if I can put something in it and the children can work their way through it, like paint by numbers, then they're going to get it.
But this is, you know, I think this is one of the reasons we changed the curriculum, because actually this computational thinking expressed through programming is complex.
Yes.
It's challenging. It's not. Yes, it is. It's perfectly capable for doable for SEN pupils and a real wide range. But it is more of a challenge. And actually, I found the kids. What was really interesting to me, I had a reporter come into the school, one of the schools I was teaching at, and as they is, the head teacher nabbed three children, didn't nab the ones I necessarily wanted to be nabbed, and they went out and they showed him some programming projects, and I thought they were going to choose all the gaming type stuff and all the rest of it. They didn't. They went and showed him all the maths based stuff, all the most complex things, and I think children actually appreciate challenge.
That's right.
They appreciate a bit of struggle. And when they, like us, when they've gone through a bit of struggle and then they've overcome it, then they're really sort of pumped up about that. And they think, oh, they've really achieved. And one of the things I absolutely love about this computing curriculum is just that it's not easy.
That's
that,
right.
That there's challenge to it and struggle.
On,
you know.
When I'm doing the course I was doing today was how to teach computing with Python. And one of the questions I was asked first thing in the morning is, why Python and why text-based programming? Why are we doing this? And we get various responses. Oh, because the government says, because Gove's got this bee in his bonnet, because the BCS have said it. But once you get through those, you'll then somebody will say, we're teaching resilience. We're teaching problem solving.
Yes.
And if you're going to teach problem solving by saying, here's the answer, you're not teaching problem solving.
I mean, so many times in the last, I've had to slap my own hands to stop myself interfering with, you know, I'm sorry, fixing things
That's
for children.
Right,
and I've also had, I mean, where I've been modelling with other staff, I've actually, I've had to take teachers away and say, look, please don't fix it for them. Right, if you do that, but I think it comes from an ICT mentality, which is like, okay, I've got 45 minutes to do this lesson. I've got to get a spreadsheet done because we need it in science later.
Yeah.
And so we're going to rush through that. And if a kid goes, oh, stuck, you go, oh, well, we've got to get it finished. Got to get it finished. So I'll show you how to do it. And yes, we help children, but actually, the more children come up or fix things for themselves or solve a problem, A, the better they feel about everything. The old endorphins start getting through their body because they've done something, they've achieved something. A bit of struggle is such a healthy thing.
And we frequently try sabotage today. You know, that's where you start with something that works absolutely perfectly. Then we agree what kind of things might stop it from working. Mm. Then we put in some things. You deliberately then bug it, break it, and then you coach somebody else to fix it. And the teacher's saying, these are brilliant because... Yeah. It's actually fun. I can actually see the children in my class thinking they're going to try and catch somebody else by buttons. And you can transfer that to hardware as well. It's not just about software. Okay. So like Raspberry Pi, let's take the power cable out just a tiny bit so it looks like it's plugged in.
Yeah.
And then people have to try and figure out why is it not. Because I mean, how many times have you had in your class where a child's put their hand up, so my computer's not working. You just move the mouse.
Yeah.
And they go,
oh, screen's gone back on.
Yeah. And they feel so stupid. Whereas if we're teaching them how to solve problems without giving them the answers, and we're doing that. Phil, I would say you're one of the best advocates for computing at school, and I always try and promote computing at school through this podcast.
Yeah.
Somebody who's not a member or something that you've seen on there, what kind of things would you say?
Well, I think I love computing at schools because I think they're really, really we're an excellent group of people. What I love also is for me, the fact that actually a lot of the new national curriculum of computing sort of came out of a teacher's body.
Yes.
You know, you can't say that for every other curriculum area. And I think a lot of the problems that people have bumped into it because of that, you know, here we have a part of the curriculum which actually was informed by a real teacher's group of people who wanted to make a difference. And actually, I love the fact that there are teachers, there are industry specialists. You know, I don't
very
always understand.
Group,
yeah, and I love that. I mean, there was a discussion about whether iPhones were whether it really was an input and an output device recently. Now, okay, some of that was quite high level, but actually, I ended up using a little bit with that with the kids. I ended up saying, well, actually, to some of the more advanced kids, yes, actually, there's two parts of this, and one of it does one bit, and the other bit does the other bit. And I thought, well, I got that from the forum and people having the discussions, and I love all of that. I think it's really good. And the sharing of resources.
Phil, I've always got an enormous amount from talking to you and meeting with you in the past. How can people get in touch with you, find out more? I mean, you're on Twitter, you're on Computing at School, you've got your own website.
My Twitter is BaggyPR, BAGGIEPR, and my website is code-it.co.uk, which is currently hitting about 800 to 1,200 hits a day. So
you've got schemes of work and lesson plans.
There's about 20 modules of Scratch planning.
It really is fantastic.
There's the jam sandwich on there with resources. And I'm starting to extend into a few Key Stage 1 resources as well.
Is the solution to the jam sandwich there as well? So people don't have to solve it themselves.
Yeah, that's to solve it yourself. One of my new modules that I'm really, really excited about is playground game flowcharts. So we send the children out with some flowcharts, and we don't tell them anything about flowcharts apart from starting the start, and they work out what playground games they are, and then they play them. And then we bring them back into class, and I've taken one line and bugged it.
Yeah.
And I had this one girl at a school I teach in, and she's a really bright girl, and she got cross at me with the last one. She screwed the piece of paper up. She stamped her foot. She accused me of getting it wrong.
You're not doing your job properly. Yeah, you're supposed to be helping her.
The whole lot. And I'll tell you something. She solved it at the end. And she was like, she came up and thanked me for the lesson. Yeah. And I thought, you are a really, really bright kid. And I've managed to make you struggle a bit. That's good.
In one of these previous podcasts, I mentioned how I had this really stupid idea one Sunday, which was to take my wife, who never walks anywhere, up this really steep walk for a day. And she's got a disability and can't walk very far. And all the time we were there, I kept thinking, why on earth did I do this? But the thing is, once we got there and we knew we'd done it, it was like, wow, we can actually do this. Now, we could have got a ski lift or a helicopter or something and got there to the top. But when you know that challenge is really, really tough and you've solved it,
yeah.
but you have to get through a lot of challenges that you can't solve to get there. Yeah. Phil, it's been absolutely lovely to talk to you.
It's been wonderful talking to you, and always nice chatting to you and seeing what you're doing. I'm a follower of what you do as well, so well done.
Thank you.